This is an interview with Ellen Moore, formerly of the UW Dance Program. It's the 19th of April, 1988. I'm Laura Smale, doing the interview for the University Archives Oral History Project, and we're talking in the Oral History Office. And we were just talking rather generally, and you were saying that Margaret Dobler died in 1982, mm-hmm. was in Tucson, and talking about her last year. And I just thought it would be interesting mm-hmm. to have that,
mm-hmm.
Have you say that on tape.
Right, and I'm also remembering something I might forget to say, and that is there was a woman out there doing a doctoral thesis on Margaret Dobler. I was just remembering that there was a woman doing her doctorate in the department out there, which was chaired by a man who got a doctorate here, John Wilson. She was doing her paper on Marge, since Marge was living then, had moved to Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And that thesis, I'm quite sure there is a copy of in our library. And that, I think, is quite autobiographical and quite comprehensive.
Mm.
And Marge mentions her interviews with Judith Gray, when in the last several communiques that I had from Marge. And I remembered that, thinking about those letters, but the main impression I get always when I reread those hastily written notes is how fraught she was with her life at that point, and how she needed time by herself, and she couldn't seem to ask for it or demand it, and forever was, the gregarious part of her was saying yes to all the people who wanted to visit, but it was clearly tearing her apart, and you could, and she, the one of the letters that I reread this morning was very redundant. She said some of the things she said at least three times in the letter. So she was in a state of very extreme anxiety at that point. Mm-hmm. And it was very soon after. Let's see, what year, that would have been something like, well, that would have been, yeah, so that would have been something like 76.
Already in 1976?
Uh-huh. And I didn't bring that correspondence. I don't want anybody to see it. I'm never going to show it to anybody. But one of them had been written when it was quite clear that I was not going to be tenured, and that was 76. So I guess that was 76, and it was the last time I saw her, and I bet she was really well into her, I would be sorry to call it senility, but loss of contact. Mm-hmm. By 77, she died in 82, that's 5 years. I know that she spent a while in a nursing home in western Kansas where she had a nephew or two who were doctors and chose to be in their care at a point where she knew what was happening and was having to make decisions. And I guess Wayne, her husband, Claxton, traveled to see her a few times, and I think the rest of the time he stayed in Tucson, figuring that there wasn't any point in being with her very much anymore. There's a woman in Milwaukee who did see her when she was in the nursing home, who was another one of her students, Cohen, Jinka Cohen, mm-hmm. Who has taught dance all her life. Saw her, and Jinka adored her, and would tell you colorfully about that last encounter, and about Marge's graciousness, even if she had no recollection who anybody was. Still, her mm-hmm. graciousness, her just innate ability to make contact with people, sense them, and be always interested in them. And that reminds me of when I met her. I mean, I'm jumping way back now. I only had to exchange a sentence with her in the hall to decide that I would come here and study with her.
All right. Well, then, if we're going back that far, then I would like to start from scratch with the interview.
Okay. Any way you want to organize it. I'm just going on as I remember things and think it's pertinent.
So let's proceed. Would you just give me dates to begin with? When you were born?
1925.
When you graduated from... Well, we can get into that later. This is just dates. You came here in 1951.
Right, 49.
Oh, 49.
Right.
And you got your degree in, as
51.
An undergraduate?
As a graduate student.
As a graduate student, got your graduate degree in 51. I see. Then were taken onto the staff then?
No. I went away and taught for 3 years.
So you came back here in 54.
In East Lansing.
Yeah.
It was Michigan State.
Well, we'll
then.
Go into the details,
right.
But it's just the dates
right.
I'm after.
Okay.
So
then I came back. I was gone for 3 years. Then I came back, taught for 1 year. And
so that's 54, 55.
Right. And that was the year I got married. I met Warrington Colescott.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll get those details
right.
later.
Okay. And then... I rejoined the faculty in 1969.
All right. And?
And I departed in 76.
Okay. I'll have to turn that off. Would you then say enough about your background to explain why you became a dancer?
My mother was a dancer, but in her generation, women who had dance potential usually weren't realized as dancers. And she did do some performing of castle sorts of ballroom dance, Irene and Vernon Castle sorts of ballroom dance with a partner in Mason City, Iowa, in the local theater. And of course, I didn't think to ask her all kinds of questions until after she was gone. But I know that she taught young people ballroom dance also. I think she probably taught them the waltz and the polka. And maybe if they stayed long enough, she taught them foxtrot and castle walk and Maxis and or whatever else was going on at the time. And she loved to dance, and she used to take me on trips to see the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo when it was coming through Des Moines, Iowa, and Chicago. I saw the Yost Ballet. I was very lucky that my mother was interested in dance, and I was dancing around the room that was delegated to my two sisters and me to occupy in our waking hours. I did a lot of dancing around in the space. My mom provided me with little tiny black ballet shoes, which I still have, and various kinds of costumes. So obviously I was showing more interest than my sisters, who were also quite coordinated and could dance fine, but I was the one who just really had twinkle toes. And I took ballet, acrobatic, about 2 weeks of toe and tap from local teachers who weren't very good as I was growing up, third grade to seventh or eighth. I went away to boarding school as for junior in high school, and then there was this weird thing called modern dance that somebody came and did, and I thought it was just really weird and boring, and I didn't stick with it. Then I went to college at Wellesley and sang for 3 years in the choir, and then the last year decided I'm never going to dance again in my life. I was a rabid social dancer, jitterbug and things like that. Like my mom, our day's version of it. If I don't join the dance group my senior year, so I did. And again, there was this strange stuff, modern dance. I think the woman had been a student of Humphrey and Weidman. I didn't like the classes she taught or the sessions that we had where we where we did what she told us to do. I thought, oh, that was boring. But we were supposed to give a concert, and we were all encouraged to make dances, and I positively adored to make dances with my college roommate, who was also in the group. And that spring, Jose Limon gave a master lesson in Boston, and we were told about it, and we went. And in the middle of the class, I turned to my roommate, Robin, and said, I'm going to New York next year. And I did. She said she was too, but she ended up in Hartford, Connecticut, dancing with an unknown named Alan Nicolai. And I went to New York and happened to find a place to live, and it was very hard to find anything, almost across the street from the Graham Studio. And I took one look at the Graham, what was going on in the Graham Studio, and I signed up and went right in. And that was the beginning of my really meaningful dance history.
What year is this?
That was fall of 47.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'm very grateful for that rudimentary tap and ballet that I had, because it did put down patterns in my body that are like ABC, that people who are going to dance have to know, because they're what two legs do. It was mostly legs. So I studied for 9 months in the Graham Studio. I got restless in New York. I went to the summer school in Connecticut, where Graham and Limon and other luminaries in those days, Charles Wideman, Doris Humphrey, Louis Horst, were all teaching. Those are all luminaries of that period in modern dance history. And somehow felt I wasn't going to go back to New York City. In fact, I decided maybe, since I had a sister on the West Coast, maybe the thing to do was to go to the West Coast and see what's happening out there in dance, and so that I would have company, good company, in the big city. I think I was feeling very alone. And also, there were so many good dancers in New York. I recognized I had to be a zealot to be willing to live the life they were living in that place. I had grown up in North Central Iowa. I really was not oriented to, and yet it was very exciting to me to be in New York that year. I saw many important concerts that are all modern dance history, and yet I didn't really picture myself being only a dancer. I pictured myself having children, and that was in the back of my mind all the time, working, I'm sure, and my decision making.
Mm-hmm.
We all expect to have children in those days. But I really wanted to have children. I was not thinking about it just because that's what everybody did. I knew I wanted to have a family. So I went back to Iowa thinking I was going to go west to join my sister. She got married in January and went to the East Coast. And so there I was, stranded in the middle. And she said to me, well, I hear that the University of Wisconsin is a wonderful place to be. Why don't you go over there and get a job? And I had had a job in New York as a zoo major, chemistry minor, a lab technician, mm-hmm. in a kidney research lab. So I came over here, interviewed a few people.
This is in 1949.
48. Uh-huh, spring of 48.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. No, wait a minute. 47, no, you're right, it's 49. Of course it's 49, that's when I came. Yeah, right. Having interviewed with the man perfunctorily about getting a job as a lab technician, I, of course, went over to the dance building to see what was going on, thinking that's what I would do in my spare time, knowing I knew there was dance here. That's one reason why my sister's comment took. And I thought, gee, I haven't been in the Midwest for a long time. I can get dance and a job in the same place. I didn't know of too many places outside of big cities where I could do the dancing. So I went into the building. I was told to go up and join the class Marge was teaching, which was her theory and philosophy class in dance. And I really didn't know a whole lot about what they were talking about, walking in totally out of context. But in the hall, when we came out, she asked me a question about what I'd done. I mentioned New York, I mentioned leaving New York, I mentioned loving to dance, and she said, well, I think this would be the perfect place for you. And she looked me right in the eye as if she cared. Mm-hmm. And I walked right into the office and signed up for the summer session. Mm-hmm. And so that's when my life as a student here, as a graduate student, began.
You hadn't heard of her before?
Yes, I had. Mm. I drove back from Connecticut, where I'd been that summer with all those luminaries, to the Middle West with a woman quite a lot older than I was, who had also been a student there. And she was talking about this very eccentric woman who had this very eccentric program in dance at Wisconsin. So I had this warped picture of what had been going on here. But that didn't deter me very much at all. It was dance, and it was close to home, where I hadn't been for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that somehow just felt like something I was ready to do, just to come over here. So, Marge wasn't on the faculty that summer. Shirley Dodge, who I guess was a student here. I know that she was a student of Mary Vigman's, and I guess she must have also studied in the department, but I'm not really clear on that, come to think of it. But she has had a reputation all this time as a teacher around the country. The moment is teaching in Missouri, maybe, in a university, in a drama department. She's probably as old as I am, possibly a little older. She was teaching that summer. She was teaching a very Vigman-style class.
Will everybody know what a Vigman-style class is?
Probably not. Why
did you
explain? Eventually, I had some 2 weeks of classes with Vigman in Switzerland. So, and then I was really clear on how Shirley was comfortable with Vigman-style teaching and just did it, too.
How do you spell it?
W-I-G-M-A-N.
Okay.
She was a modern dance pioneer in Germany, about the same age as Marge Dobler and Martha Graham, all pretty much the same generation. But she was very interrupted with the Second World War. Her dance was very expressionistic, like some of the artists of the period. Nolde was very fascinated with her dancing and did some paintings of some very abstract of her dancing, some less abstract and more recognizable. It was the period of the Bauhaus. They were interested in her, too. Vigman-style teaching, mainly what I remember is, of course, we went across the floor like we always have in all minor dance classes that I've ever attended. This is continual procession of dancers across the floor. And around, and then you come across again, and around, and you come across again. And the thing that was unique about the Vigman classes, the way Shirley and Vigman herself taught, Vigman in the 2 week sampler I got, and Shirley, was that there was room for us to improvise on what they were establishing as a theme. In everyone else's classes, we were expected to do it exactly. In both of their classes, we were expected to pick up the material, the idea, to be excited by it, and of course there's no more rapid way to get excited by it than to be invited to do it your way instead of their way, because then it internalizes immediately and it becomes your creation with their catalyzing. Who else was teaching that summer? I had to take physics that summer as a requirement and a prerequisite to being a major. I had to pick up all of the courses that the undergraduates had taken that were prerequisite to a bachelor's degree. And physics was one. I had a lot of those. I eventually had to take anatomy, kinesiology, various sports classes in teaching, athletic, various kinds of athletic sports. I'm being redundant. I haven't thought about it for so long. I don't even have any vocabulary. But things like badminton I had to take, and then I had to take theory courses in how to creatively teach swimming, badminton, baseball pitch, volleyball serve, tennis serve, things like that. They were trying to equip us to get a job in a public school. And we would get it on the strength of our PE courses. And then we would slip in dance anywhere we could, and that was about all that was hoped for then, unless we landed one of the many jobs that were opening up in colleges teaching dance. And this was being planted all over the country at that point. And I was hired when I got through with my degree at Michigan State, where the department had, the program had already been founded by a woman.
Wait a sec, how does Michigan State come into this?
That's where I taught after
I see.
And that program had already been founded. So there was a whole first generation of departments having been founded by the time I graduated. And so I didn't really need those teaching courses in badminton and swimming because I was lucky enough to get one of the college courses to teach a college position.
After. Did you resent having to take them?
Oh, no. I always liked going to school. You know, I always learned something. It certainly wasn't second nature like all the dance classes were, but it wasn't a major cross that I bore either. Often it was quite baffling. Kinesiology was baffling, which I took with Ruth Glasso, who was another one of our luminaries in the department at that time. Reputation all over the country for her developing a way to teach sports creatively. Helping students set their own goals and test themselves on how they were arriving at their goals. Mm-hmm. And that was very revolutionary. And that was really pretty much what Marge Dober was doing too. So this was going on in the two areas at the same time in the building.
I should have checked to see whether Ruth Glasso, what she said about Marge. I've interviewed her. Did they work together at all, or was it just...
No, not really. I think they had professional respect for each other, but I think they also disagreed often. Mm-hmm. I think there was a kind of a running, fairly good-natured dialogue between them and argument, mm-hmm. professional dialogue and argument. Just quite consistently is the impression I get.
Hmm.
And I had dinner with Ruth not too long ago, and it was that those bristles.
Oh,
I could still
a bristly argument.
Uh-huh. For her it was bristly. I can't picture it being bristly for Marge, though.
Do you know what the basis of the
no,
difference
I
was?
Really didn't. I really don't. Marge started out in sports. She taught basketball. She adored to play basketball. Mm. And maybe Ruth in some way felt that she abandoned that area for the sake of this frivolous thing called dance. Maybe it took Ruth Glasser a very long time to come around to accepting dance as having equal importance with volleyball and basketball. Mm. I really don't know, and I've never thought to ask her. In fact, I really haven't had very many conversations with her outside of being a student mm-hmm. of hers and struggling with her advanced kinesiology without having had the beginning kinesiology. She was very kind and patient, as a teacher, Ruth Glasso was, and really knew what she was about. Really, the night I had dinner with her was the first real chat I've ever had with her, one-to-one, ever. But I did feel there was some sensitive territory there. And I mean, my loyalty to Margaret Dober is boundless. She was everything any female could want for a model. Mm-hmm. And just happened, of course, to be in an area where she really had access to me because I was a born dancer. And it was so different studying with Marge than studying with Graham because which I had done first. I had graduated, I had gone to New York, I had taken that 9 months with Graham, and I'd gone to Connecticut, and I had experienced top-level professionalism in modern dance as it existed then, and it was very dictatorial in most cases. I mean, you did it this way. It was a new thing, and the pioneers did it their way, but in the classes, we also did it their way. Unless we were taking composition courses.
So they didn't let you improvise as you walked across the floor?
In in courses where we were studying rhythmic structure, we improvised movement to rhythmic patterns. Those classes were mainly taught by non-dancers, musician, accompanist sorts of people, rather than primarily a dance sort of person. And they were happy to have us create our own movement. And that's really the first place I ever improvised. I teach improvisation. I am known for being one who would always improvise rather than set a dance. And that was my first improvisational experience, was in a rhythm class at Connecticut. But in Graham's class, there was no alternative to the way you did the movement. You did it exactly right down to the direction your palms were facing, like she said. And that's, I'm sure, always been true in ballet classes. And the modern dancers were formalizing their form of expression very rapidly. There was the Graham technique, there was the Humphrey Wideman technique. They were very different techniques. The Graham appealed to me utterly, and Humphrey Wideman, which is what the influence was in those weird classes I'd had in boarding school and college, those were Humphrey Wideman technique. And they were very unstylized. Where I loved Graham's style, I loved the drama of her vocabulary utterly. I felt like it was just coming straight from my gut instantly. It was saying what I needed to say, what I needed to get out. So then I came here, and we talked about the Improvisation Shirley Dodge's class.
So and how did you respond to that then, after liking
it. I really loved it. I was, having had that work at Connecticut, I could handle being given that kind of latitude. Let's see, I was saying something about Marge and her personality and her, when I suddenly got off onto, in that other direction, I don't know what it was, but when I...
Well, we were talking about the difference between Marge and Ruth. Lasso.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And I don't really know the answers to that argument between the two of them. And we were talking about the sensitivity that I sensed when I had this conversation with her recently. Ruth seemed to really want to talk to me as one of those remnants of Marge in the community. And maybe Ruth had some sadness about the fact that I was not kept in the department, feeling that what I had really would have been something very valuable to hang on to. Because there was no one else on the faculty who had had Marge for any length of time whatsoever when I was on the faculty. So they were really letting go of a lot of their tradition to let go of me. And I didn't ever imagine they would let go of me. For a very long time. But anyway, that is another story. I think where we really are is that Marge started to teach in the fall, and I really had a hard time adjusting to her classes at first. Now, do you want to re-steer me? You look like...
No, I'm about to turn the tape. I was just waiting for the little light to flash.
It was a hard shift to go from the incredible theater of Graham to the very experimental, scientific kind of exploring and searching and building and finding that took a lot of time in Marge's classes. Eventually, I swore by the experience I had doing that. But at first, I felt terribly impatient because I had been zooming across the floor in all those other classes. Breakneck speed, usually pretty early in the class, I was used to being driven by the teachers across and across and across and counted at loudly. And it was exciting but also frightening. I mean, we were all afraid at any moment we would suddenly fail, you know, and we did fail over and over and over again, and we never wanted to. So there was that endless dealing with failure and success in those dance classes, which made them very exciting. And suddenly in Marge's class, we were all related to, like, thinking, feeling human beings, each of whom was as important in the room as she was. And I tell you, that was such a switch. I mean, when had I ever been taught anywhere by someone who gave me that kind of importance? Certainly my mother didn't. I mean, my mother told me what to do and where to go at every moment. I'm sorry to say, but I think most mothers of that generation probably did. There was certainly none of the literature that has changed everybody's thinking about how to rear children. So there we were in this room with this woman who had been a science major, whose lab had now become the study of movement in human bodies, and how you got from the raw material of what arms and legs do into the art form of dance. And by the time I got there, she had it all figured out. I got there very late in her tenure as professor, in her term long.
She would have been in her already 60 or so?
Uh-huh. She was close to retirement. The department was founded in 26. I think she was teaching basketball in the department earlier than that. So let's say she was teaching from 1920 on, and she died in 80. No, well, she stopped teaching in... 54.
Well, I mean, she retired in 54, and she stopped teaching in 67. She came back and taught, apparently.
Oh, did some guest teaching.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. For a week or two, usually.
Yes.
I don't know if it was very long. Mm-hmm. 54, and see, I got my degree in 51.
Mm-hmm.
So that was only 3 years later. So she, by that time, she had figured out her whole system, which I have outlined in detail in this article.
Have you, I'm going to...
I'm sure that we all felt different depending on what our previous experience had been. Probably most of us had had dance classes somewhere, though. And I can't imagine that anyone came in having had a dance class, anything like this. And I think I probably wasn't the only one who was impatient with the time it took for us to learn to be creators and artists with the material of movement. She was teaching us to be scientists and to be artists and to be teachers, all three in the same, all in the same classes.
All right. Now, I want you to be specific and say, give an account of.
Right. Well, what it felt and looked like to me when I first got there was, and I'd had this wonderful summer with Shirley Dodge doing this Vigman movement, so in that room, you know, so. Boy, it hadn't occurred to me to ask anybody what these classes
were. Excuse me, are we in Lathrop?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Same. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Fifth floor studio. These classes felt kind of like gym classes to me. But the thing that happened was that she taught from the skeleton. She constantly had us sit down and think. And I was not used to sitting down or standing up and thinking in dance classes. I was used to taking information, copying the body that was there to copy, and learning to mimic as fast as I could. You do not become an internalized dancer for a long time learning that way. We thought we were becoming dancers very fast. We were learning to externally to be a superficial sort of automatic, robotized dancer that way. We were not learning about ourselves as possible artists very much at all. And we were given no credit in those classes. We were one of a mob. Often we had no sense that the teacher knew who we were. The teachers changed constantly in the Graham studio. So to suddenly be in a room with this woman who wanted us to understand how the body worked first, and then how, if you put certain kinds of things that the body would do together, you set up a sequence of movement
Now, is this being done by lectures, or are you sitting on the floor and moving your fingers?
Sitting on the floor, looking at the skeleton, having her call our attention to things about the skeleton, having her talk to us about the nervous system. She was lecturing and then always setting us into motion. I mean, she would give us some information verbally and show us on the skeleton, show us charts of the nervous system. She was forever showing, reminding us what the nervous system looked like. Then sending us out onto the floor with our blindfolds and our knee pads, with a certain part of the anatomy to observe on our own bodies moving.
Mm.
Close to the floor so that we didn't have to deal with balance very much at all. Finding our way through some sequence of events that, for instance, it could all be mainly in the arm.
Mm-hmm.
Starting from here, feeling it rolling in its socket up to, let's say, as high as it would go. Then she prescribes that we're going to rotate the lower arm, and then we're going to bend the elbow. And she has stipulated this much. And then we're going to rotate the arm in the socket backward. I'm just making this up as I go on, but it's related to the kind of thing we did. Then we're going to rotate the lower arm outward. Then we're going to open the elbow. And we're going to do all of this close to the floor, probably starting in a position where it's going to be hard for the arm to do any of it. And then what does the body have to do to make it possible for the arm to do it? I mean, that is the kind of detail she wanted us to explore.
Mm.
It was not do this, 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 and we'll do it in three counts, and let's go at this speed. You know, it was slow. And that was one of the essences of the way she taught. She gave us time to find out in depth what all this was and to discover there was an enormous amount of depth. And that always, even starting with something that unemotional, that intellectual, that factual, that at any point where she would stop us, we already were somebody else because we were in that position. Or if the arm turned this way, it's as different as purple is from blue. And if the whole arm rises, it makes the body want to do a particular thing. And it feels one way. If you get to this point and then the elbow closes, it's closing, and it's a totally different emotional experience and dramatic statement. So we, because we were inside of human bodies with the entire psyche there, ready to blot up any food it was given, and God knows we had not been given very much food for our psyches ever in that post-Freudian era where nobody dared whisper the word psychiatrist or psychological. Those were no-nos. And here we were, and we were being told at any moment to stop. Wherever we were, at whatever speed we had gotten to wherever we were, and feel what it felt like to be there. Ah, God, it was like every window in the world was thrown open.
You said you were impatient at first, though. How long before you got over there?
Because the switch from crawling, from zooming across the floor to crawling around and having to sit and listen and look at the skeleton, and then move, and then she would stop. She would stop us to feel, and then we would go on moving, or she would stop us and give us another bunch of theory.
Mm.
Our bodies were dancing.
Mm.
Mine did not want to stop.
Mm.
I didn't care what the theory was, although the theory was invaluable and not available anywhere on this earth that I ever found. I study dance in a lot of places with all the great people we had, except for one or two that I managed to miss along the way. But, it took her a while to pull me in totally, and I never got used to being stopped once I was dancing. I would often stand through her verbal section of the class as a reminder to her that we had stopped over there somewhere where I wanted to get back and go on with the dance that we were doing. But she had this incredible ability, because she was never a 100% dancer herself. She was a scholar, and where it was appropriate for us to move, we moved. When it was appropriate for us to stop and think and understand what we had just done and get a picture of where we could go next with it, then we stopped. Didn't matter how painful it was, we stopped. And then when we would get up, our bodies were stiff again, you know, and then our bodies didn't want to pick up where we'd left off, because we weren't there anymore. We were planted on the floor. So it was this hard dynamic of shifting in and out of lecture and move. But on the other hand, she consistently did get us back on our feet, did get us to translate what we were doing on the floor to our feet, and adding the problem of balance and going across the floor, adding the momentum, adding the inertial components, and finally letting our excitement rise with suddenly catapulting our weight through space one way or another. And by this time, she had established counts with us with our help. Never, no, this is how we're going to count it. Having us decide how many beats we needed for each part of all those movements we had strung together. And of course, we didn't all come up with the same answer, so there was a matter of compromising constantly. Well, all right, she says 10, she says 5, let's take 8 for this section, and then who wants how many for this section? As a group, by consensus, and we'd never heard that word then, we were building this movement phrase rhythmically. And eventually it got set, so many counts for each part. Then we had to learn it by those many counts. But eventually we had the momentum, we had learned it, we were doing it the way we had decided across the floor. Then, and she always had control of the time and the clock, which is so hard to do as a dance teacher, there was always time for two more things that were very important. One was we got turned loose and could improvise.
For the end of the...
On the structure. Again, you see, we'd done it loosely on the floor, we had done the formal thing we had built, and then we got to take it apart again and just find out where we wanted to go with that as a starting point and still get ourselves across the floor. And that was hard for us to take that thing we'd built apart too, after we'd finally gotten it together and had liked the thing that we had assembled. Then to allow ourselves to take it apart, that was a hard step too. And then... Still time, stop the class, come to a screeching halt. We went to dance all the rest of the day and review where we had started and what we had done and where we had gone and how the nervous system had contributed, and in conjunction with the muscles and the skeleton.
Did that help you, that part about the nervous system?
It was all... Well, I'd been a science major myself. I'd been a Zell major. So, of course I was interested, but I was much more a dancer than a scientist. And yet I'm terribly glad that I had that much of a scientist in me, because it has been wonderfully enriching as a teacher to use all that material. And it is very meaningful to the students, as long as you can time it in a way they can tolerate.
Did students ever drop out?
Of her classes? Mm. Yeah, they did. And of course, the PE majors were required to take her classes. Now, that could have been a source of one of the tensions between Marge and Ruth. It could be that Ruth didn't want her siphoning off those PE majors and demanding that they come in here with the dancers and have to deal with this experience, which wasn't the one they had chosen at all. Mm. If she told us we had to do that to become better dancers, we could suffer along with it until we saw the potential of it. But for them to come in, it was much harder for them, I'm sure, to imagine that they needed this in order to be PE majors. But no one knew where they were going to wind up teaching either. However, I think it was a power play on her part, figuring everybody in the world who is going to have anything to do with movement had to see the whole. Here was the other great big thing with March, the whole self in operation. Not just the qualitative self that the PE people are engaged with so much. Did I say qualitative? Mm-hmm. I meant quantitative mm-hmm. self, measuring how well they're succeeding at hitting the target. Or the intellectual self that helps them figure out how to improve their serve. The feeling self had to be in there, and she felt if they were going to graduate from that department, and she was in it, they were going to get in there and deal with their feeling selves. So they would go out as more, and also, I'm sure, I haven't gone along with all this ever, that she thought if they were going to teach PE, and if they were going to be in any kind of positions of control, that they, if they could possibly have a good experience with dance, they might let dance in. Mm-hmm. And she wanted everybody in the world to be dance educated. Or movement educated, including the feeling self, which immediately takes it into dance education. Do you want to steer me again?
Louise Klepper is there at the same time, and you have mm-hmm. a nearly mm-hmm. equal number of classes from her. What is she like?
I think I probably put in more time in Marge's classes than in Louise's. Mm. And Marge had it set up that way. Because we had 3 one-hour classes, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, with her. Well, you see, as a graduate student, I was also doing the undergraduate program. So I'm not typical of somebody who was just an undergraduate and then just a graduate student. Mm. I was just getting dance education by the arm, the truckload. No, the undergraduate courses,
also?
the graduate courses, the science course, the background,
yeah.
All at once. It was heavenly. I ate it up. It was what I needed to be doing. I was really in the right place at the right time. It was such good luck. And I was when I was in Graham's studio, too. You know, it just all worked. Louise Klepper taught marvelous technique classes. And I think one reason that we could be patient with Marge's process, Marge's incredible building process in her classes, was that at the end of the day, in the afternoon, Marge's were always in the morning. Her theory classes were in the afternoon. Then we got this marvelous dessert of going to Louise Klepper's mm-hmm. classes mm-hmm. from 3:30 to 4:30. God, I think they were only an hour long. I can't believe that. I'm quite sure they were only an hour long. But she knew we'd been warming up in Marge's classes in the morning. You know, she knew we'd had quite a lot of movement. So mm-hmm. she didn't have to do what I have to do in my classes now, just pick up people up from zero mm-hmm. and lift them into another realm. An hour and a half is not long enough for me, but I struggle with it all the time. Anyway, we went to Louise's classes, and Louise was the most magnificent teacher of technique. Hmm. She, I've never really asked her, even though I lived there for a year, how, I think she finished the undergraduate degree and the graduate degree. I think she got her master's degree, which was all crazy because she'd been a professional dancer with Hanya Holm, and she had studied with Mary Bigman. And I'm sure that her classes were a wonderful combination of the Vigman influence and the Domer influence. Louise, too, never forgot the intellectual, informational side of what we were doing with movement in her classes. She was very fascinated with the anatomy and how it worked. And her mind never stopped sorting out very fine points of how particular movements we were doing articulated in the joints. She was rhythmically totally accurate, totally informed. She knew how to integrate her technique class with what she knew we had had from Marge, because she had had Marge. It wasn't like she, a professional dancer, came in with none of this tradition and background and taught her own way. Mm-hmm. She came in with everything she had and was required by Margaret Dober to take all of it. So, because otherwise, how could she be totally integrated into the program? That's the kind of control Marge had on the program. She was good, she knew what she was doing, and by golly, it was the way it had to be. No one has that kind of control anymore in the dance world of the university. There are too many professionals around, each with their own say about, but she just really was there first.
Does the ideal dance department have that kind of centralizing?
Although, you see, some departments, like Betty Hayes's department in Utah, I think, for a long time, tried to only use Dober students. And I think there probably was more than one chairperson around the country who did that. Eventually, all those people were accused by the rest of the dance world as being very inbred and turning out a very esoteric sort of student who went slower, who taught slower than the professional dance world did. And you can see where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we all were taught with that time to think and to understand and to feel. And most of us who were really affected by this program couldn't ever leap back to racing people through a dance class. It couldn't go so fast that they didn't have time to feel. And you build movement differently if you want the dancer to feel it as she does it too. You can't cram it because it's nonsense. It's just movement with no particular logic a lot of the time, if you're just firing it out of a gun in any way, shape, or form, and just dazzling the audience with the flash. And so eventually we had a reputation of being this esoteric place and this offbeat place. And that's where that description that I got with the woman driving across the country came from. This was not like anything that exists in the professional world. This is some sort of crazy ivory tower place where people crawl around with their blindfolds and their knee pads, which I didn't elaborate on. It isn't here. The knee pads to take care of our knees, unlike other dance studios where you just simply get on your knees, and if they hurt after doing something 10 times, too bad. You know, either keep coming or don't come. I never saw anybody wearing knee pads in any of those studios. They just suffered, and I imagine some of them eventually suffered deeply, injured joints. Blindfolds, because she wanted us to internalize the joints, the feel, the anatomical events, in addition to just the sensation of the arm turning, is rich. I mean, even if you don't stop and think, oh, what does that mean? Just happened to me. it triggers. I mean, it's already rich, just the embryonic beginning of a gesture. And then she wants to get the entire symphony of psychological overtone too. So, and the blindfolds meant we weren't distracted by anything outside of the movement experience. We were just in it. And we really got it deeply.
So you were Vince, so you obviously were completely wrapped up in the program, completely agreed with everything that was being done.
Well, I could see how liberating it was. I could see that I was being given all I needed to teach forevermore, that I would never have to remember how some other teacher taught something.
Mm-hmm.
I could build endlessly out of this information. And she published nothing showing us any kinds of lesson sequences. That might be inaccurate. Maybe in her first book, Movement, Dance and Its Place in Education, I think it was called, if you ever had a copy of it. There might have been some teaching sequences in there, although I think when I wrote this chapter, I looked, and there wasn't. There wasn't any very filled in anything for students to use 3 years later to go by. And I decided in this paper that she undoubtedly did that on purpose. So the last thing she wanted to do was to prescribe to us where to go with what we had, that she trusted our creativity, our integrity, to figure out where to go, just like she did.
Mm-hmm.